It's Tuesday, February 24th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, everyone, I got a great show lined up for you tonight. Yes, it's a good one. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. My name is Todd Cochran. Yes, you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast. If you're a new listener to the show, hey, I want to welcome you to the podcast. Make sure you get over to the website, check out all the great content. Of course, the archive podcast available via the podcast link. You can also check out the newsletter, sign up for the newsletter via the newsletter link on the website. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. It'll cover everything that I cover in the show. Of course, cover all of the listener links and all of the articles I discussed tonight. If you're a longtime listener of the show or part of the Ohana, hey, I want to welcome you back to the show. Of course, thanks for being subscribed and staying subscribed. Make sure you tell people about the show. We definitely appreciate it. Well, I tell you, it's been a very, very busy week here in Honolulu, and I'm getting ready to head off to Japan. I leave on Friday. And we'll be packing up and taking the portable studio back out again. And I'll be out there until March 12th when I come home. So this is the next to last show before I head out to Japan once again. Hey, I did get you guys were watching the CES videos that's been on the Geek News Central over the last month or so. And many of those videos were filmed by Andy the cameraman. Well, Andy is from Chicago. And Andy, by profession, is a MD, and he is coming out to Honolulu this coming Wednesday to basically check out a new hospital out here. He may be in the market to basically check out, you know, look for a new job. So I'm excited about Andy coming out, and he's going to be out here, I guess, 7 days. Sadly, I'm going to be gone on Friday, but him and I are going to hang out. And taking him out to dinner, showing him all the sights. So I'm look forward to Andy B coming out here to Honolulu and spend some time with us. And who knows, he might make a cameo appearance here on the Geek News Central podcast on Thursday. Well, I spent some time this afternoon in my accountant's office, and finally everything is finished and done and wrapped, and taxes are, I guess for a better word, in the bag and ready to go out to the IRS. So the damages are done, checks are written, and so that's monkey is off my back for another year. Hey, this past Saturday we did a roundtable, and it was a great one. It really was. And one of the folks that came in and actually did a demo, or actually talked about his product, was a company called PogoPlug. And if you do nothing else, watch the first 25 or so minutes of the last Tech Podcast Roundtable. And I hope you watch the whole thing. It's an hour and 10 minutes long. We had Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show on. He gave us some really cool, interesting tips on feed Firefox plugins. So he went through some plugins, and I found a couple that I added to my Firefox install. And then we had Ewan. He does a podcast in the UK, and had him online, and he was talking about cameras and taking pictures with cameras and editing the actual images themselves to get a better product out of basically mobile phone pictures. So that was a good one. But this affordable cloud storage by Daniel Potterman, who was the founder and CEO of Cloud Engines, the inventor of PogoPlug, is the one that I really want you to pay attention to. When we were at CES, we're running around so crazy and everything's busy. And while Andy's talking to one vendor, I'm moving up to the next one and, you know, kind of getting an idea of what the product's about. And meanwhile, the you know, I don't really catch the full interview. And when I watch the, when I'm doing editing, I'm doing just that. I'm editing, I'm cutting, snipping, and I'm not doing a lot of listening to the entire, into the entire interview, even when I was editing the videos up. But when he went through what this product does, it's cool. It really is cool. And, all I can say is just go watch the first 25 or so minutes of the roundtable. Link is available over at techpodcast.com. You can check that out. And basically, it's like this cloud computing device that you plug into your network, attach a drive to it, or assign a drive to it, and boom, it's like this cloud computing. You can get access to this thing anywhere in the world. And it's really cool. It really is. So $75 special right now. Go on over at Pogo Plug. You can order the device now, and it'll start shipping here in a few weeks. But I ordered two. Yeah, I ordered two of them just because I'm going to give one of them away. And what I would like to happen is if you guys listen through the rest of the show, at the end, I'll tell you how you can win one of these Pogo Plug devices. It's $75 value, and but you got to listen to the end of the show to know what you're going to need to do. Actually, I'm going to drop it somewhere in the show, so don't go just fast forward all the way to the end because it'll be in here somewhere, all right? All right, let's take care of a little business here before we get into the content tonight. And I've got a good lineup for you, of course. But first and foremost, hey, if you're looking for a domain name, virtual dedicated server, go over to GoDaddy.com. They have exactly what you need in that department. And they got great prices on all their products and services. And when you get to that checkout counter, use the promo code TODD. That'll save you 10% on your order. Basically, Geek 5, you can do 15% off orders $20 or more. Todd 20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. So that's really the best one. You know, when you're out there looking to pick up a shared hosting account, it's a great product. And of course, you can check that out. All the products and services over at GoDaddy.com. Also, I have a special code in the promo codes, actually in the show notes tonight, that talk about the SSL certificates. And it's a discount that they've got going on those with those right now. So you'll have a way to get a discount on those as well. Okay, of course, the event on Saturday was held in conjunction with our sponsor GoToMeeting. And what we kind of did there was something was kind of cool. We did a multicast. And what happened was, is I had the GoToMeeting session being recorded here. So when that GoToMeeting session was recorded, it was encoded up in Flash, and that's what you see when you click on the link on techpodcast.com. It takes you to the Flash. We also have the Tech Podcast Ustream channel was up and live, up on my site and up on Ustream. So, but then what happened was Andy McCaskey over at SDRNews.com, he was running his Ustream stream from the GoToMeeting session. In other words, when you're in the GoToMeeting session, the you see what it's just basically it looks exactly like it looks on the other person's computer screen. It's, you know, it's in full resolution. So he was able to actually take on his end and stream on Ustream exactly what I was streaming on the Tech Podcast channel. So we had two Ustreams going. We had the GoToMeeting session, and it was a pretty full house in the GoToMeeting session, so there was folks that were going into the overflow on the Ustream. It was kind of cool. It really was. So it was a good strategy, and we're going to do that a lot more. So it was like this, you know, multicast situation that allowed us to really reach a lot of people at once. But, you know, back to the basics of the application. You know, if you spend too much driving or flying to meet clients in person, stop letting travel costs eat away at your bottom line. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix. GoToMeeting lets you launch sales presentations, product demos, or training sessions right from your computer. It's like meeting in person, but less expensive and less time-consuming. Meet from your office, home, or hotel room anytime, anywhere. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.goToMeeting.com/techpodcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast for a free trial. Okay, what have I got lined up here for you tonight? Let me look and see what I've got in the stack here and make sure I've covered everything. Oh, got to tell you about this. On Saturday, You guys in Ustream said the volume is a little low. You want me to crank it up a little bit for you? Let me see if I can do that quickly. I hope that helps you out. On Saturday, one of the neighborhood kids came by the house, and it wasn't somebody I was real familiar with. It's a teenager, a little older than my daughter, and actually coming over to see my son, who's 3 years younger than him. And he comes to the door, knocks on it, and the first, you know, I go to the door and say hello, and he introduces himself, and he's got an MP3 player in his hand. And the first thing he says to me is, he says, do you know how to download music off the internet? And I'm like, why? He says, well, I got this MP3 player, and I've only got a few songs on it, and I want to find music on the internet. I said, you know, you can, what kind of software came with your MP3 player? Did it give you any type of thing you can go online and, you know, let you purchase or, you know, sign up for a service where you can get all the media downloaded into it? And he said, oh, no. He says, but I want what Anna has. You know, Anna's got a lot of music on her MP3 player, and she's got a Zune. We've talked about that in the show before. So I kind of explained to him that I pay for the Zune Marketplace pass, basically the music pass that allows her to set up all the music in her player that she wants, and she basically has access to the entire inventory. So he says, well, what do you know about peer-to-peer? You know, and I'm thinking this kid's 13 years old, and he's asking me about peer-to-peer. So, you know, I did the fatherly thing and basically explained to him that, you know, getting stuff off of peer-to-peer was not right. It was actually illegal, and that he could get himself and his parents in a lot of trouble by running a peer-to-peer application. And he says, well, I don't care. I want to get music. And I said, when you go home, why don't you have your mom or dad call me? So, you know, because I didn't want him going home and say, hey, I talked to the neighbor guy, and he was talking about, you know, not good to do peer-to-peer or doing peer-to-peer and, you know, getting me in trouble in the process. So he did. He went home, and his mom called me about 5 minutes later, and we introduced each other and talked for a little bit. And I said, your son was down here, and he was asking about getting music on the internet. And he was asking me about peer-to-peer, and you could hear her pause a little bit. And I said, I just tried to explain to him, you know, that it was illegal to get, download copyrighted music via peer-to-peer. There's a lot of music out there. I just didn't want you, you know, I hope you and him would have a conversation about this. And she goes, thanks. I've been worrying about that. And she says, a good time to have this conversation. So then I kind of turned her on to what I, you know, would have done for Anna and some options that are out there. But most of these kids just don't know. They don't have a clue that it's, you know, it's not right to do that. And so I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, him coming to the door. And, you know, the first question he asked me, you know, I'm kind of looking around like, this is a loaded question, right? Where's the cameras at? And, you know, talk to your kids, because he was coming here to ask my 10-year-old how to get music on the internet. I intercepted him at the door. Now, I'm hoping that from the conversations we've had here at the house, that my 10-year-old would have been informed enough to, you know, basically gave him the same answer. I don't know. Only time will tell. But anyway, that was an interesting development this weekend. All right, let's as a footnote here, let me go ahead and move into the regular content. Imagine that you work for a bank, okay, and you get some documents in the mail from a bank in Nigeria asking to start accepting correspondence from the bank via fax. And a few weeks later, sure enough, the fax number that has been authorized to send documents starts sending you documents asking you to transfer millions of dollars in from Nigerian bank accounts into other offshore banking accounts in a variety of different countries. Well, it appears over a two-month period, some an individual, I guess he's originally from Nigeria, set forth a scam on an amazing level. And he actually got to the point where Citibank tried to transfer funds out of a Nigerian bank to these other accounts for a total of $27 million. Now, the only thing that really stopped it from going through apparently was maybe a little bit of a clerical error in the paperwork and the routing, the correct routing into the accounts. But can you imagine that? You know, we've heard all the time about people being scammed about, you know, hey, I've got an uncle who knows your brother that's got $25 million for me. All you got to do is send me $55,000 to process the paperwork and it'll be yours. You know, how many people are still falling for that all these years later? Well, Citibank tried to wire $27 million to Nigerian scammers. Now, the individual behind the scam has been arrested. He actually came to the United States like a knucklehead and, of course, was arrested. But, you know, essentially the scheme fell apart when the target banks could not process the transactions, which is just amazing. It really is that it would get this far. But it makes you wonder why these banks don't have $27 million of our taxpayer dollars almost transferred in a phishing scam here that was you know, pretty impressive. He got all the way to the point of where they actually tried to do it, you know. So banks are not immune to these scams. Individuals are not immune to these scams. Here in Hawaii, we had a lady that showed up at her condo, her empty condo, that had people in it. Locks were changed. And apparently what had happened is that, and I don't know if you're seeing any of this in your neighborhoods, but someone had put online on Craigslist that this particular house was for rent. And they sent the money for the deposit and the first month of rent overseas. And then the folks that were renting say, hey, by the way, we're not there. We don't have the transaction. You know, the keys are with us. Just go ahead and call a locksmith and have him change the locks. The folks moved in thinking they had a legal lease, and she shows up and they're living there. Can you imagine? Can you imagine being the family living there? I just, wow. So if you're looking for a rental and you're on Craigslist, you better meet the person, okay? Go there and meet them, all right? Don't just do business over the internet. So that was one that happened down here in Honolulu last week. I think there's been three other instances as well. So it's not the only one, but it was the one that made the major news. All right, over on Ars Technica, Nielsen, which I don't know if I necessarily trust Nielsen, but Nielsen has reported that Americans still love their TVs but are embracing DVRs. Now, I find this totally fascinating that the number of hours people are using time-shifted TV is about one-fourth of the volume of people that are actually just watching TV without a DVR. Does that surprise all of you? And I'd like to do a little poll. How many of you, and all you got to do is send an email, geeknews@gmail.com, and I'll just take the first 100 emails that come in, and I'll do a random poll. How many of you have DVRs? How many just have a TV? You know, but DVR, TV. And then I'll know whether or not if you only have a TV without a DVR, that's what I'm trying to find out. But one quarter of the people are watching TVs directly, right? Right from the live programming. And I thought it would be time shifted more than it is. On comparison, folks using the internet are using the internet about half, they're watching on TV and videos on the internet about one half of what they are on just watching normally. Now, the year-to-year change from fourth quarter of 2007 to the fourth quarter of 2008, watching TV in the home rose by 1.4%. Watching time-shifted TV rose 37%. Using internet went up 3.3%. But watching video using mobile phone, they didn't have any data on those points. As to be expected, the 25 to 54 year age bracket seems to be ones mostly using DVRs. The 12 to 17 year olds are watching most videos on mobile phones. So that gives you a little bit of an idea where the breakdown is. But it's a pretty good article. It's a full breakdown of all the statistics that they found. But I can't remember the last time I watched live TV or waited for a program to come on and sit through the commercials. I don't. I just, it's not how I watch TV anymore. So I know maybe I'm the odd one out, and maybe the rest of you do. I know I very rarely even watch news live. You know, I've got certain news channels set up to record, and I get home and it's like, okay, I'm not interested in that. Fast forward. You know, I basically get a 30-minute or 1-hour news program done in like 20 minutes. So I'm the ultimate fast forwarder through content, but I know a lot of people watch the entire stuff. I don't always do that. A lot of stuff going on in the peer-to-peer space. This seems to be the big, big battleground right now for the RIAA, the MPAA, firms overseas, the Irish Record Music Association, the IPBI, I believe, which is the British one. They all are just going hot and heavy on peer-to-peer. Now, we've already talked about on the show how the IRMA has talked one ISP into blocking access to file sharing sites like Pirate Bay and all these other peer-to-peer sites. Well, the thing that torques me off here is the Pirate Bay has more torrents on it than illegal or copyrighted material. But they've talked to one ISP into, or actually, you know, strong arm one ISP into blocking content to these file sharing sites. Now they're starting going after all the other ones in Ireland, and they are threatening lawsuits if they don't comply and follow what this other company's doing. We're starting to see this more in Europe. We're starting to see it. There was actually an article today in France where they're going to be blocking peer-to-peer in France. Just this big assault now is on peer-to-peer sites. And, you know, that is the same thing is kind of happening here in the United States. We're seeing this big attack on ISPs, and basically carrots being dangled out there saying, hey, if you block peer-to-peer, you know, maybe we'll give you. So what it is they're using a different tactic. They're going to try to cut us off from peer-to-peer sites from a source. That from the source, from the, you know, the delivery source, you know, the, your ISP. So I don't know what can be done to battle this. I don't know if there's anything can be done. It just means that a lot of these sites are going to go underground. The hackers are just going to have to get busy, and they're going to be, you know, coming up with new ways, more sophisticated ways to share materials. It's not going to stop it. It's just going to go more underground. But I could see where BitTorrent, doing any type of a BitTorrent transfer in the near future could be very hard because, you know, they're just one and all, they're just going to block peer-to-peer sites. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be sites that are out there trying to have legitimate material on there. You know, I've run a peer-to-peer tracker on this on Geek News Central before. I did it to distribute GNC in the early days when bandwidth was really a big cost. So we'll see what happens with this, but I think this is the new battleground that's out there. Now, another trick that the malware users are doing is that a new malware trick is that these folks are not only putting up phony reviews on websites, but once these applications get installed, these supposed antivirus applications, what they do is that they package up some stuff and they change your host file. And then whenever you go to like ZDNet or someplace like that, it loads, especially if you're searching for this particular application, a review of it, it loads, which looks like a page from ZDNet, but it's showing their review that's been superimposed on a fake page. Download.com, PCAdvisor.com, PCMag.com, ZDNet are all sites that they've made phony sites on that they actually redirect your computer to go to different places. And anytime that you actually type the name and try to find a, you know, some sort of a legitimate way to remove this application, they send you to a site that is one of their rogue sites. You never get the application removed. So be very careful out there. Don't be installing any malware applications, no spyware applications, no antivirus applications, unless you have vetted the company, the product, and it's a name that you can trust, okay? Because otherwise, you're going to end up with something on your computer, which a few of the listeners of this show have, that is going to end up causing you nightmares. And your machine's going to end up being hacked. And, you know, if you're on a website and all of a sudden, boom, something pops up and says, hey, you've got a virus, be very careful. That's where a lot of people get sucked in to installing something that they shouldn't. And the next thing, though, they got a machine that is owned by some bad guys. Report on the BBC is saying that 6 out of every 10 employees steal company data when they leave their jobs. That's amazing that they steal the data. What do they do with the data? Are they turning it over to their new employer, or do they think they just need to have it? How many of you know of someone that has left a company that you work at that has been caught trying to take materials out of the company? You know, here you have a company that has paid your wages, put food on your table, probably, paid your car payment because, you know, you're having the job with this company. And then when the company goes through bad times or you're let go, then to have malice to take the information from the company with you. I just don't get that. I don't understand that thought process. But they're saying 60%. 6 out of every 10 stole company data. Now, it doesn't go on to say that there's proof here that the people actually used that against them. You know, maybe they take it thinking, okay, I'm going to use this, but end up not doing so. I don't know. But that's an amazing. And they did a poll of 945 adults in the United States. It amazes me. And to think that, depending on where you work for the government and do something like that, you're going to go to jail, you know, for taking content like that without authorization. All right, moving on here. Those of you that are eBay users, there's been some warnings going on about a third-party add-on that's used by a lot of sellers being flagged by Google as a potentially malicious after it become infected with a Trojan. What I'm trying to do here is they're trying to get the word out. The application is called Octavia, A-U-C, maybe Octavia, A-U-C-T-I-V-A. It provides a tool for sellers. And the company did confirm there was a problem for a very short time where there was a virus that had attached itself on its servers, but they cleared that up. It was a Trojan called AdClicker, which is classified by security specialist Symantec as very low risk. The application itself has been removed from the virus has been moved from the application. So if you've downloaded that, and they've got some time periods on this article, you may want to update or look what you have to do to get rid of that. But it says that more than 186,000 websites have been reported to stop badware for hosting malicious programs or web scripts. And the folks over at Octavia are trying to get their name removed from that list. But so heads up for you if you're using that particular application with eBay. You know, what are some of you that are huge eBay sellers? You know, what are the tools you're using out there? Buyers, what are you guys using? You know, I'll be honest with you, I had some great deals in December on eBay. I got stuff that was shipped for free from Hong Kong. That was totally cool. It really was. There's an Adobe flaw out right now that's been used in attacks since early January. It's only been very small numbers of people that have been affected, but it is a very dangerous and unpatched vulnerability in its PDF reading software. And the Adobe Reader flaw, what it does, let me look here. A vulnerability researcher at intrusion prevention vendor SourceFire posted a patch or a flaw, but the unsupported flash applies only to the Windows version of Adobe 9 and comes with no guarantees. I'm trying to figure out what this thing does. To date, the flaw has been used in small-scale attacks against targeted against specific individuals Symantec, for example, says it tracked only 100 attacks thus far, but the number has been increasing since exploit code for flaw, which affects both Windows and Mac users, was made public. So I don't know what to look out for. It doesn't tell you what to look out for. But it says a vulnerability involves the way the Adobe Reader opens files that have been formatted using the JBIG data compression algorithm. And Adobe says it plans to patch the bug by March 11th. So just a couple weeks away from that. So be careful where you're opening Adobe documents out there. Only open trusted ones. If you want to put this unsupported patch in, you can do so. It's available. Let me look at the website. I have the link up to this article, and the link to the patch is in the actual article. I know that there's been a lot of discussion in the news about layoffs, and the folks over at Computer World put together a list of H-1B visa employers for 2008. If you're an H-1B visa recipient or holder, that is working in the United States, I'd love to hear some comments from you on what you feel about the, you know, basically the circumstances upon people that have are getting let go from their jobs that work at companies that have H-1B users. You know, what's the reaction been at your work? Has there been any hostility towards you? Also, if you've been in a company that is, you know, where you've been laid off, where there's H-1B workers at that are there after you've been laid off, I'd love to hear from you too. But it goes through and it lists the a list about the top 50, maybe 100 or so companies that have H-1B visa employees. Microsoft is on the list with 1,037. They're not the largest. There's a couple others that are above them. They must be firms that outsource H-1B visa workers. But some names on here: Microsoft, 1,000; Cisco, 422; Intel, 351; Qualcomm, 255; Prince George County Public Schools, 239. Are you kidding me? Baltimore City Public School System, 229. Google, 207. University of Maryland, 191. University of Pennsylvania, 186. University of Michigan, 183. Yale, 145. Harvard University, 143. Stanford, 138. I'm sure many of these are research assistants and people that are maybe even professors. Who knows? But blows me away that that's in Maryland, Prince George's County Public Schools have 239 H-1B visa workers in the school district. Is anyone in this show in the Prince George's County Public School System or in the Baltimore City Public School System? I would love for you guys to call the school and find out how they're utilizing the H-1B. Now, don't get me wrong. When my wife and I, when we met, she was working for a travel agency. She had a H-1B visa, but it was for her company in Japan, so she could bring people here and do tours and stuff. She never worked for a company in the United States, but this is blows me away that they would have those for schools. But I understand the reasoning for it, because they can't find qualified help or whatever, but pretty shocking. If you're an H-1B visa holder and work here in the United States, I'd love to hear from you. I really would. And I'd love to hear kind of a contradicting of stories. You know, what's going on with you and what's going on with people you work with and so forth. Hey, over the weekend, Microsoft was a big stir where Microsoft paid out too much severance pay to a small number of employees. Apparently, a number of employees got paid over $4,500 too much. And they basically said, hey, you got to pay this back. Well, Microsoft has basically backed off, said, okay, it was our mistake, our bust, you can keep the money. Because it was turning into this PR nightmare for them. And probably good, you know, $4,500, you know, 45 people overpaid by $4,500 each, you know. Chalk it up to stupidity that you overpaid them and let them have their money, and they consider they get a good deal and, you know, get a little PR plug and not have this, you know, basically this call for lynching over at Microsoft by the folks out there that said, what are they thinking about? All right, if you've been in the AT&T store in the last couple of days, there was a new phone that was introduced called QuickFire. And if you bought one of these phones, you may want to go talk to the AT&T store because they have removed the QuickFire smartphone from the lineup. The QuickFire smartphone has been too quick to crash and burn. The touchscreen and QWERTY keyboard-equipped handset has been recalled from store shelves on what they call quality issues. The phone is manufactured by UT Starcom, a spinoff of PCD, and so they've been having some severe issues with this. They're not saying exactly what, actually they do. Early reports haven't specified what part of the phone specifically is prone to malfunction, but multiple reviews of the phone criticize the touchscreen for its lack of accuracy and sluggish response. Maybe that's part of it. So if you've got one of these, you may be able to go back to the AT&T store and get a refund on it, pick up a different phone. All right, Windows 7 update's coming. Those of you running the beta, Vista Service Pack 2 is also build has been released. And it contains over 691 hotfixes. So if you've been on the test team for Service Pack 2, you probably already got that. But just goes to show you there's going to be a big update for Vista here in the near future. How many are familiar with Chumbi? We did an interview with the folks at Chumbi at CES. I think, is that video up on the main site? Maybe not. If it isn't, it's going to be up very soon. It's probably one of the next ones, or it's already went up, one of the two. But when we talked to the folks at Chumbi, they were looking to get out of the device business. They have a great application that does some cool stuff, and they were looking to move their software into other devices. Well, Chumbi widgets leap into digital photo frames, televisions, and other connected devices. So their strategy is paying off. Folks at Broadcom have announced a partnership with Chumbi to extend internet-connected TVs, set-top boxes, Blu-ray disc players with Chumbi-powered widgets via Broadcom's system-on-a-chip solution. And Chumbi's also made arrangements with Samsung and Marvel to use the Chumbi widget with their processors as well. So this is pretty cool that we're going to have flash-powered widgets delivering essentially infotainment services to a variety of devices. Very, very cool. Chumbi, essentially, if you're not familiar with it, Chumbi enables users to select really kind of their favorite parts of the internet, and it delivers that into a fresh format. It's displayed in a little mini format of the data. There's about 1,000 different widgets and 30 different categories available right now. Videos, music, sports, podcast, partners with a lot of different variety of the major players out there. So Chumbi's got it moving forward, and I think their strategy that they announced at CES 2009 is starting to pay off. And I'll see if we haven't got that video up, I'll make sure I get it up here tomorrow. Over on USA Today, and those of you that are watching the show right now, you need to step outside and take a look, because the sky tonight, permitting that you've got a clear sky, you should be able to see a comet that's making its pass, its closest approach to Earth. The comet Lulin is going to pass about 38 million miles away, reaching its peak brightness and fastest apparent speed at 10:43 p.m. Eastern. You should be able to see it from dusk until dawn in either hemisphere with telescopes, binoculars, or even naked eye. If you're far away from city lights, it will appear just below Saturn in the constellation Leo. There's a sky chart over on USA Today. So if you just search on USA Today for Lulin, L-U-L-I-N, you'll be able to go outside and check this out. The comet is greenish in color, and there's a reason for that. And they're expecting some fireworks the closer it gets to the sun because of it's unknown if it's passed in this vicinity recently, and it could be pretty spectacular. Scientists are pretty excited about that. A little more space news. NASA has got a satellite that's going to be checking out CO2 levels. The Carbon Observatory, a satellite called the Orbiting Carbon Observatory is supposed to be launched on Tuesday. And so over the next 2 years, the satellite's going to be taking a lot of carbon sampling. I don't know exactly how it's going to do that, but should be pretty cool to see the mapping of this if they make it available to the public. How many of your Joomla users? You know, just like WordPress, you have to stay on top of security fixes. You have to make sure that stuff is set up correctly, or you could end up with a hacked machine pretty easy. There's a book out now called Joomla Web Security that if you're a hardcore Joomla user, you may want to consider picking this up. It's 248 pages of web security just for Joomla alone. And so if you're a Joomla admin, it gives you a set of security tools and skills founding in the Joomla community, all in a book. It's been published by Packet Publishing, available I guess on Amazon. I don't know what the price here is, but I think they need to come out with one of these for WordPress. It probably is already, but this is a good one for those of you that are Joomla CMS users. All right, a lot of talk right now, and a lot of very serious talk about the there's a new bill. It's called the Internet Safety Act, and there was some discussion about this last week in the show. But it's something that should make all of you concerned as well. If this piece of legislation gets pushed through, if you're running a Wi-Fi connection in your home, you're going to be required to have up to 2 years' worth of connection logs. Yes, you heard me correctly. 2 years of connection logs in order to quote-unquote Internet Safety Act to be able to the government will use those logs to go after people that are connecting to Wi-Fi networks illegally or in use and prosecution of people that are doing stuff online that they shouldn't be. Primarily, they're trying to catch people that are going after child pornography. So the ISPs are going to have to keep these logs, but also home users as well. So there's been basically a language points that out. Now, trying to enforce that, I don't know how they're going to do it, but maybe what will happen over time if this goes through is that vendors putting out wireless devices will have this on by default. There might not be anything you can do about it. All right, if you've been to Britain recently, in the last 5 years or so, you'll know that there are CCTV, closed caption TV cameras everywhere. You go into specific districts of in the UK, and especially in London and in different areas. You know, it's just like CCTV central. I don't know how many thousands of CCTVs they have, but it's pretty amazing how many they have. Well, imagine that you have just bought a bar or a pub, as they would say. I guess you shouldn't call them. They're not called bars in London. They're called pubs. Imagine that you just bought a pub and you went to apply for your liquor license, and one condition of ownership required him to apply for to install a CCTV system that captured images of every person that came into his pub, and he had to make that footage freely available to the police as part of a new blanket policy covering particular parts of London. Can you imagine buying a business and being told by the government that you have to put a CCTV in your business that has to be accessible on demand by the law enforcement? That just shocks me. Oh, here's the number. 4 million and counting CCTV cameras are installed in and around the UK. How do they monitor all those? Can you imagine recording all those? But this guy, they told him, you got to put a CCTV camera in your business, inside. Well, luckily, the Office of British Information Commissioner took exception to plans, saying this sort of blanket policy for new license holders raised serious privacy concerns and could fall foul of data protection rules. Finally, someone has started to push back. But this is a different group. This isn't the group that's trying to get the license. So we'll keep you advised on if we find out this guy's forced to put in a CCTV or not. But, you know, my goodness, go into a private establishment to have a adult beverage and maybe some food, and you're getting filmed? It's okay if the business owner puts them in for himself or security, but to be told you had to do it, I don't get it. I really, really don't get it. All right, with the economy the way it is, it appears that a price war on mobile devices is underway. We all know that the Apple iPhone, which costs $199 if you get a two-year contract with AT&T, is has been a pretty cheap price. But people have been scared away from the iPhone largely because of its cost. And I must admit, the phone is expensive. If you look at other phones, other plans, much cheaper. You know, across the board, the iPhone is one of the most expensive phones to have with their data and voice plans. It's just crazily priced. Well, with T-Mobile, Sprint, Verizon, all going down in their prices, they feel that AT&T may not have much choice but soon to follow suit and lower the rates. Now, there was also a nasty rumor out today that Verizon, actually, it wouldn't be a nasty rumor, it would be a good rumor, that Verizon was coming close to coming through with a deal with Apple to be able to carry the iPhone early. Now, that rumor proved to be unfounded, but imagining the excitement if somehow Apple would get out from underneath the five-year exclusive contract with AT&T, and all of a sudden the iPhone would be available on Verizon or other networks. Go to Verizon, I'm there. I'm there. I mean, I'll be first in line. I'll camp out all night to get one because they've got better rates. They got better plans. They got better coverage and a much better network. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But they say the price wars could benefit those of you that are, in the market, maybe to pick one of these up. Okay, I got another, there's another article on this Wi-Fi issue about having to log Wi-Fi traffic. It's over on WifiNetNews.com. I'll have that linked up in the show notes for you. You guys can read another perspective on this. More Visa and MasterCard issues. Visa and MasterCard have issued alerts warning of a security breach at yet another payment processor. Of course, they're not saying who, but the two credit and debit card issues are warning financial institutions that malicious software was placed on the network of a payment processor. The only reason that people found out about this was that a credit union in Virginia actually made the announcement that they had received from Visa and MasterCard, which they weren't supposed to post, they put it on their website for their customers to know about this. So, very interesting. Both Visa and MasterCard have not said who or what or where this breach occurred or how it happened, only that the warning went out. I'm going to tell you, it won't be long before all the bad guys will have everything about each and every one of us, and there'll be nothing we can do about it. And then talk about chaos. Hey, we made a special announcement over on Blueberry.com and over at RawVoice.com over the weekend. We announced that we made our free podcast statistics even more free. Now, how can you make something more free? What we did was we removed preconditions. The precondition essentially to get access to our podcast statistics before was that you had you're part of a member of one of the communities. You had to fill out an advertising survey, which gave you 90 days of access to the stats for free. Well, what we've done is we've removed the requirement for folks to fill out that advertising survey, and everyone now just by default has access to the free stats. And really what we found out was We realized that while many podcasters want to monetize their podcasts, a segment of shows were not ready for advertising but needed the reliable and accurate podcast statistics data to continue to build their shows. So this was a large factor in us removing the requirement for podcasters to fill out the ad survey to get access to the stats. So podcasters that want to have help monetize their shows, they still have to update their ad surveys every 90 days, but those that aren't ready for advertisers yet don't have to do so. They just have access. They have access to the stats immediately once they're on. And we got information about the stats. We still have our premium stats available at a low monthly price, but it was a we figured in why make it harder for people to build their shows, make it easy as possible. And that was, our end effect, really. Now, our folks, two of our team members were out at PodCamp Toronto this previous weekend. They had a great time at PodCamp Toronto, met a lot of people, a huge turnout. I heard there was like 400 or 500 podcasters that went to PodCamp Toronto. We were glad to be one of the sponsors over there. And Angelo did a session on WordPress. I haven't heard how that went. I guess I'll find that out tomorrow. But the all indications were it was a great event, and I'll see if I can get some more information to share with you. And basically, what was covered in Toronto last weekend. Hey, let me go ahead at this point and interject here about giving this Pogo plug away. And what I would like to do is we're gonna make this real simple. What was the problem the presenter had during the Pogo Plug presentation on Saturday's roundtable? Okay, what was the problem? You got to email me at geeknews@gmail.com. What was the problem that the presenter had during the Pogo Plug presentation this past Saturday? You tell me what that problem was. And yes, you have to watch the video to find out. But email me that information at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, subject line Pogo Plug. And as soon as I receive the two Pogo Plugs that I've ordered, one of them will go out to one of the listeners of the show. We'll do a random draw of all the people that get the answer correct, and be happy to do a little giveaway here. And I have paid for these. These aren't coming from the folks over there. And I am so excited about this product. I want to give at least one of you the opportunity to get one of these as well. If you do purchase one of these Pogo plugs based upon my recommendation, please let the folks over there know that you're doing so. We're working real hard to work with the vendors that we're bringing on the roundtable to show them the value of this type of content and the response of the audiences for, basically my recommendations. So if you buy one of these, make sure you can leave them a comment or info them or email them from their website and say, I was turned on the Pogo Plug by Todd at Geek News Central or the Tech Podcast Roundtable. I'd definitely be very appreciative if you'd do that. Okay, there was in the 800 million or whatever it was, stimulus package, there was some language in there that said that in order to, okay, I'm going to read this for you. They're making the folks that are distributing this money, they're making them implement RSS feeds. So basically what it's going to have, and the RSS feed is going to contain some stuff. It's going to have a recipient's name, the name of the recipient of the award, and then what else? It's going to give the federal funding amount, the amount of federal government obligations or contingent liability in dollars. A negative number is going to represent a decrease in funding. And then it's going to have a unique 9-digit number issued by Dun & Bradstreet, followed by an optional +4, which allows an agent to submit to different bank account data for a single, whatever this Dun's is, recipient Dun's. So anyways, they're going to have this available on a public feed, so we're going to be able to watch how that 800 and some billion dollars or whatever it is, that ridiculous amount of money, is going to be spent. It'd be nice if the banks would have done that, yeah, when they gave the banks that money last year. But that's part of the instructions, that they are going to have an RSS feed with this information. I think this is awesome. I really do. A little bit of information. Let me look at the time here, where we're at. We're going to doing okay, I guess, on time. The Pirate Bay prosecution Wow, a bunch of Keystone Cops here. They hired a pirate author for PR who basically, this is so bizarre. They went out on some website and said, if you're an author and you feel that you're losing money for stuff that's going on at the Pirate Bay with peer-to-peer, we need you to send us some one-liner comments on how you feel. Well, the person they used to deliver that message in the same forums was talking how she was a member of the Pirate Bay and how she downloaded movies that she couldn't buy or get access to anywhere else because she lived in a different country, and how she liked peer-to-peer, while at the same time the Pirate Bay prosecution had hired her to get this information gleaned from these folks so that he could have something in his closing arguments. Total hypocrites. Keystone Cops that have no idea what they're doing. So we'll see how this trial goes. T-Mobile, first 3G laptop coming, we think, around March 25th for $60 a month. Seems high there, T-Mobile. Price is high. You're late to the game. You're going to come on with 3G, and you're going to come in at $60. You need to come in at $30 and have a 10-gig cap instead of 5-gig. You want to win some people over? You're going to have to be more aggressive than that. Sorry, $60 is not going to cut it. That's rumored, okay? Hey, if you've ever wondered what happens during a disaster, in other words, a hurricane comes through and knocks all the cell towers out, AT&T has a set of vans, $500 million worth of disaster recovery equipment that goes out in the field to get cellular networks back online. When the World Trade Center went down after 9/11, it took them 53 hours to get the cell networks back up in that area and around New York City. But it shows an amazing Flickr stream of pictures of what AT&T has at their disposal to get cellular networks back up online. So I think this is a good one for you to check out. Okay. Let's see. I think I've already covered that one as well. Hey, for those of you that are audio nuts, and actually I'm right now in the market for a new audio card, especially for my computer here, I found a review on an Asus X, I guess a Zonar Essence SDX sound card. It's got just an absolutely fabulous review over at digitaltrends.com. It's called the Zonar, X-O-N-A-R, like sonar, but Zonar, Zonar, I guess, Essence SDX sound card, about $180, but they built in all the things that I'm looking for in keeping, the noise down from the PC, because PCs are very noisy things, and you have to have a good sound card with good isolation. But Asus has a pretty nice card out here, and they've got just raving reviews on this thing. So I'm going to do a little more searching on it, but if you're looking for a new audio card, this looks like it. The EU has basically came out with a ruling for Microsoft. It says that you are going to have to offer competitor browsers in your install. Not only does it have to be a competitor browser in it, it has to be able to be, the person has to have the ability to choose. So in other words, when you're going through your Windows install, it's going to say, which browser would you like to use? It says Firefox, Safari, IE, and whichever one you click gets installed by default. I don't know if it means that IE will not get installed if you choose not to, but this is what the folks at the EU have came forward with, and we'll see how Microsoft responds to that. All right, last article for tonight. First evidence of a supernova in an ice core. Well, being near a supernova is not the thing you want to be. But there have been several known supernovas to have happened, relatively close in our backyard, out in the Milky Way, essentially. But the first one happened in 10,006 AD, and the second one was 48 years later at 1054 AD. And the reason they've been able to confirm that we were hit by, I guess, the blast from the supernova is nitrogen oxide spikes. And by using ice core samples, they've been able to determine that, yes, there was a nitrogen oxide spike in those specific years. and indicating that, yes, the supernova did happen. So I think this is pretty interesting that they've been able to, you know, determine this from an ice core sample. So super geeky on that stuff. But anyway, I thought I would share that with you. It's up in the show notes. Hey, no voicemails tonight, but I do have emails. Let's see if I can get them loaded here. As always, the show can be found at 619-342-7365. The voicemail number can be. You can email me at geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Let me look here and see where how much email we've got. Today is the... actually, soon approaching the 24th. Last show was on the 20th. Let me go back here and pull up email from the 20th forward. I got an email from Nir. He says, hey, Todd, check out the Maui Lighthouse. It gets powered by solar power. I have that linked up from Nir. Appreciate that, Nir. Got an email from Mike. He says, hey, Todd, I live in upstate New York and always hear news stories and in forums where people are texting and walking. What happens is that these geniuses walk off the curb and get hit by cars. How they plan to enforce this, I can't imagine. The only thing I can think of is setting up a cop at an intersection and nail them with a ticket. Better yet, let the cop confiscate the phone and hand the texter a card that lets them know where they can pick up their phone. I look at my bill and my nephew did 2,100 texts in a month. Where does he find the time? I hope he's not walking and texting because members of my family aren't known for their multitasking abilities. Near am I, Mike. On a side note, I had won a $50 $50 from Geek News Central by taking a photo of the price of gas when it went over $4 a gallon. I used the money to pay the remaining amount I needed for my Canon Digital SLR XSI. Well, that's the way to spend it. I got rid of the car and now walk to work. I take lots of photos and reap the benefits of walking a lot more. So my heart thanks you. And I thank you for helping dive into my hobby. Keep up the great work and keep me laughing, Mike. And thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. I was almost afraid I was going to say, you didn't send me my $50. I still owe people on this show like 20 t-shirts. And Sam, I haven't forgot about you. I am the worst procrastinator in the whole world when it comes to this stuff. It's horrible. Got an email from Frank. He says, okay. He said, this is about Facebook. And Frank, yeah, I have no problem reading people's opinions on the show. He says, part one, ownership of data. Certainly, you and I are careful with what we put on the web. We're grown-ups, or try to be. I think the issue with a lot of Facebook users was that if they put something up and later decide it was a mistake, or put something up when they were in high school and later grow up, or later decide they wanted to leave Facebook, they would not be able to make it go away. I think that is a reasonable concern. I think Geekazine raised a reasonable concern in favor of Facebook's new and now withdrawn terms of service when he theorized that if someone came on Facebook and did nasty stuff, Facebook had a legitimate business, needed to retain the data just as a company retains email. I'm not saying I agree, but it is a perspective I hadn't thought of, and I think it may have been on the lawyer's minds. It was 30 minutes into this week's podcast over at geekazine.com. Part two, Facebook and sex offenders. Disclaimer, I have no patience with sex offenders. I also have no patience with public hysteria. I agree completely. I've lost my email spot here. I hate it when it does that. Had another window jump in front, was trying to update feeds here. So let me kill this. I'm not having to deal with that showing up in my face. Okay, he goes, disclaimer, I have no patience with sex offenders. I also have no patience with the public hysteria. There are two false assumptions and statistics of sex offenders removed from social networking sites and allowing the interference that 500,000 plus Facebook users were there to prey on children. One false assumption is that any registered sex offender gets dropped from a social networking site are necessarily monsters chasing after kids. That's not the case. Registered sex offenders can range from horribly predator monsters to two teenagers who get caught doing the underage thing. Most sex offenders, even some of the most terrible ones, have no interest in children. There's always a wide range between jurisdiction who does and does not qualify for sex offender registries. The other false assumption is that children have the most to fear from strangers. They have the most to fear from their friends and families. That is true. Like, what is it, 97 or 98% of the time? So I tried to find a study of registered sex offenders by type of offense, but the picking seemed to be really slim. The best I come up with is this link from the Human Rights Watch. And here's a quote. Sex abuse crimes against children that have received the most media attention and have consequently generated great public concern typically involves a child who has been kidnapped, assaulted, and killed by a stranger. Although such crimes are seared into the public consciousness, they represent a tiny fraction of crimes against children. The U.S. Department of Justice estimates that around 150 children are abducted per year by non-family strangers, of which 46 result in the death of the victim. The number of those cases include abuse is unknown. According to a 1997 analysis of 1,214 juvenile kidnappings, 49% of the juvenile kidnappings are perpetrated by family members, 27% by an acquaintance, and 24% by a stranger. But yeah, parents need to be parent over shoulder when their kids are on the internet. I agree, Frank. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. But it did amaze me, though, that it was that number, that high of a number. It really did. And, of course, again, I understand that there's a full range there. I got an email from Sam, a good friend out in Albuquerque. He's part of the longtime part of the Ohana here. Todd says, hey, for your information, NASA is providing a do-it-yourself podcast activities for kids. Sam, this is a good one. This is really a good one. I'm going to have this linked up in the show notes for folks. It says basically it's learning modules on the do-it-yourself podcast page with characterized topic to assist students with creating projects about a subject of interest. And each subject model includes video and audio clips, images, helpful information, links, and related resources. A variety of audio and video clips will be provided to enhance the flexibility and creativity. Students can create video or audio projects by using free or inexpensive software on Windows or Macintosh computers. This is cool. This is a do-it-yourself podcast blog. We'll keep users posted on the latest updates. Wow. This is really cool. I have the link up to this article so you guys can check this out. Kudos to NASA on this. Got an email from Tim. He said, Todd, you're not going to believe this, so brace yourself. I don't have a Twitter account. Tell you what, though, I'll get over and sign up right now. Thanks for the super fast response. All the best, Tim. Tim, I think I actually followed you before I hit my 4,001 following limit. If you're not following me on Twitter, please do so. I guess I have to maintain a 10% follower to following ratio. I am at 10.1%. So I went, you know, it's kind of caught up a little bit today, but they want your numbers to be even. So if you're not following me on Twitter, please do so. If you got a Twitter account out there, folks, please feel free to follow. Got an email from Trucker Time. Says, hey, man shoots TV over converter confusion. Oh, yeah. I'll share this with you guys. I think you guys will get a good laugh. Broke the old shotgun out because his TV wouldn't work. Another link that Trucker Tom sent was expert warn of Terminator-style military robot rebellion. Have that linked up. That came from Fox News. Got an email from Ernest and Judy. He said, hey, Todd, I hope you're well. And I think this is a quite interesting article for your show. And this is really technical, folks. It's out of Berkeley, and it's on dense chips. So I'll have that linked up. I got an email from Frank. He said, hey, interview worth listening to. From the website, it's on onthemedia.org. And the third largest phone company in the it's Comcast in the news, saying it's the third largest phone company in the U.S. and largest provider of broadband internet to homes with nearly 15 million customers, many of them whom apparently hate Comcast. Wired senior writer Daniel Ross parses a troubled reputation of a media giant. So this is some backlash on Comcast. Got an email from Nigel. And he said, hey, Todd, if I read this right, then everyone in the USA who has internet connection will need to keep the history of who uses the connection for two years. So I guess everyone would need a new modem with a storage device and enforce user logins and capture the data. I'm all for the intent of these bills, but it will cost a lot of money. Say 40 million modems, $100 each is $4 billion. Surely there's a better way to do this. And he's referring to this new bill that's going through that we talked about earlier in the show. Got an email from Ryan. He says, hey, Todd, I notice that you sometimes post listener links in your podcast. I was wondering if there was any chance of having this included. It's about a blogger appreciation contest. I have that up. It's from performancing.com. And he said, hey, oh, this comes from Sam again in Albuquerque. He says, hey, Todd, did you read about the Watershed Ustream.tv offering? Sam, look at the price. Look at the price of the Watershed offering. You thought Mogulus was bad, or I thought Mogulus was bad? Oh, my goodness. Ustream's even more expensive. All right, folks, that's it. We're at a wrap here. And a little rough start at the beginning of the show. I apologize. I had the perfect storm go down here. We had some bad audio at the very beginning. I had to stop and regroup, and then the intro wasn't plugged into the audio jack. I had it muted. So I was a little bit like, oh my goodness, what am I doing when I started the show? So apologize for the rough beginning. But otherwise, hey, thanks for hanging out with me. And I hope you enjoyed the show today. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. You take care. Have a great week. And we'll see you on Friday. All right. Aloha.